This week on football, Hoyland celebrates solo. Bellingham beats Barca. Brendan Rodgers puts a kit man in his place. Joe Hart hits the post. Vardy tells the Baggies they're staying down. Stanisic maintains Leverkusen's unbeaten run. And Fabio Silva is not only a bad player, he's a bad diver as well. Hello everybody, welcome to this week's episode of Goalpost for Jumpers. It is me, your host Alex. I am here with your fix for weekly football nonsense. And actually, to go hand in hand with that, this week I am doing an entire episode with no edits. As in, if I mess up, it's going to be in here. If I say a bad word, it's going to be in here. If I controversially say something that could get me cancelled, it's going to be in here. It's more of a test for myself, so I apologise ahead of time. But look, for the next 20-30 minutes, everything, warts and all, it's going to be in here. Coming up this week, we've got no team of the week, but I will be doing something slightly different. Wait for that. It's actually it's something I've been talking about for a while that I wanted to put in there. But that's coming up in place of team of the week. I have got a fan captured goal of the week. I'm going to be doing a two lies and a truth as well. But firstly, let's talk about what's happened this week. It was pretty intense weekend of football, particularly if you're a Man United fan, particularly if you're a Coventry City fan. And obviously we had the Champions League in between. The last time I spoke to all of you guys was pre-Michael Chopra. And then we had the Chopra episode last week, which hopefully all of you enjoyed. If you haven't already gone and watched that, please go ahead. It's episode 78. It's Michael Chopra, the man who played for Newcastle, Sunderland, Cardiff City legend, really controversial character, but actually what a lovely guy. Absolutely sound. And yeah, we got on really well. And he obviously, you know, hopefully enjoyed himself. And after we finished recording, he said we'll do a part two because there was plenty of things that we wish we could have asked him, but we didn't. So yeah, hopefully we'll get him back on in a couple of weeks' time. We have got a couple of new guests on the horizon as well. So make sure you stay tuned. If you haven't hit that subscribe button, go ahead and do it now. Why are you not subscribed? What are you doing? Hit like. That helps me as well. And if you're listening, which I know majority of you are, then if you haven't already rated our podcast on Apple or Spotify, then we'd really appreciate it if you do. It's only minor things, but marginal gains and all in this business. We're trying to get as far as we can, as quick as we can. So all of this is done for free for us, for you. And we don't have to do ad reads. We can have loads of footballers on. We can have cool guests. You could pay for me to go abroad and watch football in the summer. That's a pipe dream. We'll give it a go though. But this week was my birthday week. Yeah, I know. Happy birthday, Alex. It's class. I'm a year older and I feel old, but I went home. So the normal weekly fix of football I get was kind of disjointed. I watched plenty of golf, a little bit of football, played plenty of golf as well. I did obviously have a lovely weekend, and that was then ruined by Man United on the Sunday. It's a weird thing to go through to a cup final and still come out of it absolutely fuming. Coventry City, I mean, what a credit they were. Fair play to them. They were brilliant. And obviously it's going to be Man City in the final. It's just a bit frustrating that we have to just sit there and put up with it. We know City are going to get there. And whoever gets there, they're going to beat them anyway. So it's a bit of one of those, like United, yeah, great to be there. And we're going to fully believe that we're going to beat them on the outside. But really, deep down, we aren't. But it was a cracking game. And I did see a lot of United fans leaving early. don't leave a game early. When that goal went in and then was disallowed, they missed the penalty shootout. I did see a lot of Coventry City fans obviously having a great time, but upset at the end, but they did themselves proud. And, you know, I think Coventry City, a team that I've talked about them in the last couple of weeks, they have done absolutely brilliantly, and hopefully, you know, they can be a Premier League side again, because yeah, credit to their city, and a credit to the football club, the fans. I thought they were brilliant all game. I did, however, think to myself watching it, you know, if it was the other way round and you're a Coventry fan, do you know what annoyed me? I was watching it and I thought, if you're a Coventry fan, all the commentary on the game was really great because it was so anti-Man United. But I did think to myself, when Lee Dixon was trying to change the rules of football mid-game, when the offside goal was kind of going, it was like a VAR decision, and then it was taking a little while. And Lee Dixon was like, oh, just give it. Hold on a minute, Lee. You don't just go, oh, give it. We'll follow the rules. Oh, look how close it is. Just give it. What are you on about? It's the rules of football. You cannot change that just because you don't like Man United. Absolutely ridiculous. Made me really angry. But I had a nice weekend, and I did before that, up until that point, I caught up on Sunderland Till I Die. For anyone who hasn't seen this documentary, it is a documentary similar to a lot of these football documentaries out there that follow a football team, their ups and their downs. This one's a little bit different. Sunderland Till I Die, I feel like it was maybe the first one. I don't remember anything prior to that where they looked really behind the scenes of a football club. The first two seasons were so, so good. I absolutely loved them. And do you know what? The theme tune for that I can't put it in the YouTube video, which is really frustrating, but I'm going to put it on a TikTok and put it in the background. The theme tune for it is just magical. It's absolutely brilliant. But I watched that, the third season, with my dad while I was home. Just a nice little insight into the fans, the club, the culture, the players. And one thing that I would say is, because of someone, I mean, I've lived there. I lived in Sunderland for 3 years. And for someone who probably, I say this to everyone, you'll all think maybe a little bit differently, but for someone who doesn't come from the area or an area where football is everything to them, you realize how much you miss out. Like when I was living there, every single person, man, woman, child, everything about them was Sunderland, the football club, not just the city, it was the football club. And going and living there where everyone lives and breathes it, it's something else. And I know Liverpool have it. I know Manchester to a certain degree as well. Newcastle, Sunderland, these places. But then you start going a little bit, probably more south, and that starts to disappear. And I think it's probably the working class culture. And that really comes across in that documentary, the Sunderland Till I Die documentary on Netflix. If you haven't seen it, go and see it. But I feel that living in Bristol, I've lived up north, I've lived down south, I've lived Midlands, I'm in Bristol now. And in Bristol, it just feels like we don't have anything here that is anywhere near the same level as what they've got in Sunderland, in Newcastle, in Manchester, Liverpool. There's the culture of sport, but it's more like a little bit of rugby, a little bit of football, a little bit kind of tentative. It's not really like all or nothing. It's a little bit, oh, did you watch rugby the other night? Like, that doesn't exist in Sunderland. In Sunderland, it's not, did you watch the football? It's asking whoever you are on the street about the football, knowing full well they've watched it or been to the game themselves. It's just a different world. And yeah, I really feel connected to the culture as just someone living there from down south. I really loved it. And I really thought that Sunderland Till I Die documentary gives you such a good insight into what it's like. The series was different this time, because the previous series to that, it's been a bit of a mess. Sunderland has been a mess. They were getting relegated. They were being run by absolute morons. I mean, if you haven't seen the first and the second series, the owners and the chairman on deadline day, I've never seen anything like it. It's almost like they were children with Monopoly money, trying to bid on players last minute, stuff like that, just getting people obviously wiping the floor with them because they know they're going to get big money from a former Premier League team. Now it's a little bit different, but it's funny that it's different because this year or this season, not this year because it's based on previous seasons, but that season there was a new owner, and that new owner was Kyrill Louis-Dreyfus. Is it Kyrill? Kyrill Louis-Dreyfus. If you haven't heard of him, he's in his 20s when he took over the club and was kind of painted as this saviour for Sunderland. He was going to come in, I think he inherited his dad's money, billionaire, and he was going to fix the club. But he was in his 20s running a football club, and that is just madness to me, thinking of what I was like throughout my whole 20s. But he comes in and they paint this picture that he's the owner, and then kind of halfway through the series, they figure out, oh, it's still the old owner who's kind of the majority shareholder still. It's a weird kind of system they put in place when they did the takeover. Well, throughout that season, Alex Neil takes over. Alex Neil gets the club to where they should be, into the playoffs. And eventually they win it. But what is great, the insight behind the scenes for the players' point of view, Jack Clark talking about the fact that he'd watched previous series and was worried, and that was his worry before coming in and playing for them, was he doesn't want to come into that mess again. And just hearing him say that a player is affected and has seen all the kind of media hype and the documentary and thought, I don't want any of that, but has then been convinced on it. There was a couple of interviews throughout it with the striker Ross Stewart, who signed, and an amazing story. Ross Stewart was playing for kill-winning Rangers, and his dad had to supplement a quarter of his fee so he could sign for Albion Rovers for £2,000. He had to supplement £500 just so his son could go and play football and kind of start living his dream. Well, he then ends up at Sunderland, a complete unknown, and starts banging in goals. He's now moved on to Southampton, but another great insight that, you know, you wouldn't normally see behind the scenes of a giant football club. And then obviously Lyndon Gooch, for all Sunderland fans will know Lyndon Gooch had been there since I think he was 10 years old, or he was very, very young. He'd spent his whole childhood there across from California. So he grew up and he kind of like inherited that Macam nature, that culture, just being someone who lived in the city. His insight into the club and how he knew that pretty much it was his last chance with the club, and then he would be moving on and leaving the club that he'd been with for so long. And that was quite, you know, it was really touching, really sad to see. You know, he was a bit devastated and a bit like kind of in limbo, that he didn't know what was going to happen next. He's now moved on. I think he's at Stoke now, Lyndon Gooch. But I think the most moving part of it, which I found is quite a tough watch, there was a fan called Ian Wakes. He is one of the kind of fans that they follow along throughout the series, desperate to see his team finally overcome their kind of Wembley hoodoo. They haven't won at Wembley for like 48 years, 50 years. And he finally got to see them win at Wembley and win that playoff final and get promoted, but sadly passed away quite soon after. But a really lovely tribute again to a man who followed the club. And again, this fan or these fans just embody everything about the club, the working class culture, and following them home and away, spending hard earned money on the football club and just desperate to see them succeed. And you know, for any player, and I would particularly say that and direct it at someone like some of the Chelsea players, some of the Man United players, the ones that come into the club and don't understand, and they can, you can see they don't understand what a football club means to the fans. I think any of them watching that documentary, it might change their mind. So yeah, I absolutely loved it. And if you haven't watched it, go ahead and watch it. Sunderland Till I Die, it's on Netflix at the moment. Something I did want to do, and I said, and I alluded to it at the start of the show, was I had been planning something, and talking of Chelsea players who need kind of a reality check, this one is a strange one. I looked previously, probably the last 20, 25 years, at the Premier League and I was trying to figure out who is the worst player to ever score double figures in the Premier League for a season, now that Nicholas Jackson has achieved that. And I think Nicholas Jackson may just be the worst player that's ever scored double figures in the Premier League. He's now hit 10 in 28 games. I compiled a list of contenders on who I think are equally, maybe even worse than Nicholas Jackson, who have managed to get 10 plus goals in the Premier League. Are you ready for this? Because there's some classic names. I'm going to go from kind of most recent to, I would say, yeah, most recent. It's going to be 25 years. It's not going to be anything past that because I didn't even watch those players and probably half of you didn't either. But starting from the top, right, Nicholas Jackson has 10 in 28 games. That's the 23-24 season. That's the current season. Last season, the worst player I felt that got double figures, Taiwo Awoniyi, got 10 in 27 games. I actually think he's a good player, but I think he's probably the worst of those seasons. Prior to that, we had Emmanuel Dennis, got 10 in 33 games. Anwar El-Ghazi got 10 in 28. Troy Deeney, 10 in 27. I actually think Troy Deeney's not a terrible footballer, but I think he's just, his opinions off the pitch and the way he is off the pitch kind of, I don't know, maybe ruins the view of him. Previous to that, Ashley Barnes got 12 in 27. Glenn Murray, 13 in 38. Glenn Murray was actually all right. He was a good player. Solomon Rondon, 11 in 32. Sam Vokes, 10 in 37. Sam Vokes, still going now, I think. Andre Ayew, 12 in 34. 12 goals. Saido Berahino, 14 in 38. That one season for Saido Berahino. I don't know what happened to him that season. Mambiram Diouf, 11 in 34. Nasser Chadli got 11 in 34. Adam Lafondra got 12 in the 12-13 season. Aruna Kone, 11 in 34 in the 12-13 season. We had Amir Zaki got 10 goals in the 08-09 season. Dave Kitson got 10 goals in 07-08. Marlon Harewood got 14 in 05-06. Collins John got 11 goals in 05-06. And finishing off with the Egyptian legend Mido got 11 goals 05-06. There's some belting names there. Which one do you think is the worst? I think Nicholas Jackson might be. Something actually, when I was watching the game, me and my dad were watching the game. My dad's classic old school, watching it going, oh, he's useless, Nicholas Jackson. And he's right, he is. He's useless. And he actually cost Chelsea the game, I think, against Man City, because two or three really, really good chances that a normal striker, a championship level striker, would have probably put away. But Nicholas Jackson, throughout that game, some of his touches were so good. Some of his touches are really good. His like kind of link-up play, his hold-up play. He tends to get himself into really good positions as well. But it's like, and I don't think it's a confidence thing with Nicholas Jackson, because he's been confident. He was confident, especially pre-season. And then he had a little run of games, scored a hat trick. I don't think it's a confidence thing. I actually think it's a genuine ability. Some strikers just have it and they're cold in front of goal. They can finish. And it's not to say Nicholas Jackson is not going to score goals. Chelsea make a lot of chances and create a lot of opportunities. But he is just, he's not the striker for them for the future. He's got a great couple of touches in him. He can run past the player. He's quick and does get into good positions. But if you're going to win the big trophies, which Chelsea obviously want to and what they're aspiring to do, the Champions Leagues, the Premier Leagues, he's not your guy, is he? But Nicholas Jackson, yeah, scoring 10 goals this season. I can't actually quite work out how he's done it, and probably scored the worst hat trick in Premier League history. It probably beats Dirk Kuyt's, that one. Not because it was not very far out, but because he missed about 8 chances previous to that. So Nicholas Jackson, wow, 10 goals in 28 games. Will he get any more? He probably will, you know. I honestly wouldn't be surprised. Right, let's do Two Lies and a Truth. Two Lies and a Truth, guys, is the part of the show where I tell you 3 crazy football stories. 2 are lies, 1 is true. You have to guess which one is the true story. Right, so let's go with story number 1. Arsenal's Kai Havertz is obsessed with donkeys. The German forward stated it's his biggest passion outside of football. Story number two. Former West Brom midfielder James Morrison was once accidentally booked at a music festival in Hay-on-Wye. The footballer was mistaken for the British singer-songwriter who shares his surname. Third story. Story number three is Leeds centre-back Liam Cooper confirmed he once had to be rescued by firefighters after getting his hand stuck in a vending machine. Three stories. One of them's true. Which one is it? I'll tell you at the end of the show, which isn't too far away, by the way. Weekend treble time. Right. Weekend treble has been, honestly, it's been really good. And then as of late, it's been a disaster. Every single week seems to be let down by one goal. This week, I am pretty confident it comes in. In fact, I'm guaranteed that it comes in. If you're listening to this, definitely back it, because this week we're going to turn things around. We're £20 down for the year, for the season. £10 on this one returns £39.21. The first selection is Barnsley versus Northampton over 2.5 goals. Selection number two is Notts County over 1.5 goals against Forest Green. And then selection number three is Villa versus Chelsea over 2.5 goals. Three selections, ping them on. I'll put them there or however I put it. And if you want to back it, go for it. I'm going to back it this week. I haven't backed any of them, if I'm honest with you, because I don't really like to bet. Particularly, I try and keep off it. A fiver here and there isn't too bad. £10 for the week ain't too bad. Look, 40 quid pays for your weekends. Treat your missus to something. Treat yourself to some FIFA points. Treat yourself to, I don't know, a takeaway or something. But this will come in. I fancy it. What else happened this week or is happening in coming weeks? The Champions League happened and that sets up some cracking semi-finals coming up. I think the Bayern-Arsenal game was pretty much how I expected it to play out. I said previous episodes, a couple of episodes ago, when I was watching that Bayern-Arsenal game in the background, it was just like, do you remember when Jose Mourinho said football heritage? I don't know why he's right, but he's right. And Man City got done over with the same thing. And look, people might say it's coincidence or whatever, but Real Madrid with all this kind of football history, heritage, knocking out Man City when City are the better team, but Madrid had something in them to get them over the line. Then Bayern knocking out Arsenal. Arsenal by far the better team, much better team than Bayern, particularly this season. But Bayern getting it done and getting the job done and pushing it over the line. It's something about a club that kind of the culture, the feeling in the club just brings these top clubs over the line. And yeah, I think I fancied Real Madrid start of the season. That would have been my tip for the Champions League. I know it sounds obvious, but I think a lot of people would have gone City. I think a lot of people would have looked at those sort of teams. Maybe Kane at Bayern they might have gone for, or PSG. Look, PSG have still got that opportunity. They're still in it. Dortmund's still in it. If I was going to put my money anywhere, it'd be Real Madrid. PSG don't have that football heritage, that Champions League heritage. And I know it's got to start somewhere, but I just don't see it in them. Because without Mbappe, they're nothing. And if you can keep him quiet, I wouldn't be overly terrified of them. Even if you're Bayern, I think Bayern can get past them. And I obviously think Real Madrid will get past them as well. Dortmund's would be lovely to see them get to the final, but I don't see it. I really don't. But then I didn't think that they'd beat Atletico Madrid, so you never know. And then obviously, yeah, the European Cup finals and semi-finals ahead. Leverkusen unbeaten still. They keep scoring in the last minute. I don't know what Alonso's doing, but it feels like they are unbeatable. Even against West Ham, you know, they didn't need to win. I think, what was the score? Was it 2-1? They win in the end? 1-1? But even in a game that they don't need to win, like in the league this week, they don't need to pick up the points. They've already won the league. But they come up and step up. I think Stanisic stepping up in the last minute to score and make it 1-1. It's just unbelievable. And Xabi Alonso, you could see him on the touchline going absolutely mental. this unbeaten record for the season means a lot to him. And if he can do it, it's one of the greatest achievements in sport. To go unbeaten in a season, not just in your league, but outside that, in European competitions and cup competitions, is unbelievable. So yeah, good luck to them. And I actually hope they win it now. I think Leverkusen deserve it. Some of those players, phenomenal players. And look at the likes of Granit Xhaka coming in. Florian Wirtz after a long injury. I said at the start of the season, I fancy Wirtz for a big season. Free-flowing football. Alonso likes playing, you know, and getting a lot of goals, making attacking plays. And he's one of those. Look, he's a tactical mastermind because he's a central midfielder and he used to read the game brilliantly. But he's got them playing in a way that is attacking and it is ferocious. And you look at West Ham, look, a solid team, but just couldn't stand them. And even if Liverpool had got to the final, and I think a lot of people thought Liverpool were going to get to that Europa League final, I didn't fancy him against Leverkusen. I thought Leverkusen would have the edge over anyone. So I think they'll win that as well. FA Cup wise, yeah, City, I'd probably go for City over United. And in the league, I think where we're at the moment, I said Arsenal two, 3 weeks ago, I thought they'd have the bottle. I didn't think they were going to win every game to the end of the season, in the same way I don't think City will win every game until the end of the season. I do think there's a lot of drama left. A lot of Liverpool fans came away last week against Palace thinking that the world was on fire and they were crashing out and there was no chance for them and all crying, and then they go and beat Fulham and they go top, I think, temporarily, and then Arsenal win as well. It's not over. There's a lot to go, and you know, it might only be 5-6 games, but they're important games, and the slightest mistake, the slightest hiccup, and we've seen that City have got that in them against Real Madrid, who, you know, Real Madrid didn't play particularly well. I do fancy them, even against Chelsea in the FA Cup. They were there to be beaten. I really felt that. And I thought Chelsea were pretty good. With a decent striker, they'd have knocked them out. So I do think City can lose it from here. I do still fancy Arsenal. And, you know, I don't think they'll be the bookies' favourites. But I have a tenner on them. You know, I do still fancy Arsenal. I think they've got good mentality. And I think they maybe might have needed that little slip up to refocus, recenter, and then go again. And I think if City just slip up ever so slightly, Arsenal won't from here on out. But you never know. Look, it's Man City. Who knows? But Haaland, you know, look at the previous season. Haaland was on fire. And then the seasons prior to that, they always had someone scoring the goals. At the moment, it's like the goals are coming from a little bit everywhere. Foden pops up, De Bruyne pops up, Rodri pops up. It's not a bad thing, but in those crucial moments where there may be 1-0 down to a Palace or a Fulham or, you know, a Wolves, can they have a player like a Haaland to step up? And he hasn't shown that at this kind of end, back end of the season. What I will say about Haaland, one of the most ridiculous statements that I heard this season was Roy Keane saying Haaland has the first touch and kind of like the interplay of a League Two player. That's completely so not true. Watch him last season, watch him for Dortmund. His first touch is brilliant, by the way. And I know that video went viral of him in the Rondo struggling. Anyone can struggle in a Rondo. It's not the easiest, especially when you're getting pressed inside 2 yards of space. That's not his game anyway. But his first touch is usually immaculate. He's brilliant on the ball, always plays the right pass, always puts himself in the right position, gets very few touches throughout the game, but very rarely puts a foot wrong. So to then go out and start slating him like Roy Keane did, obviously it's for clicks and for views, but it was just unnecessary. Erling Haaland's the best striker probably for the next 10 years, I would say. I mean, currently, for me, Harry Kane, I think he's got more to his game. But Erling Haaland, yeah, he's got another 10 years in the bank and he's probably going to bang out 30 goals a season. And to try and criticise Haaland after one or two bad games and say that he's got a League Two player. And actually, League Two players aren't bad. It's not like they're terrible. So I thought it was disrespectful from Roy Keane, but I also kind of rate it because he's kind of getting everyone talking and getting everyone kind of niggled as well. Right, let's do two lies and a truth answer. I gave you three stories. Two stories were lies. One was a true story. You had to guess which one it was. The first story was Arsenal's Kai Havertz is obsessed with donkeys. The German forward stated it's his biggest passion outside of football. Did you think that was true? Second story, former West Brom midfielder James Morrison was once accidentally booked at a music festival in Hay-on-Wye. The footballer was mistaken for the British singer-songwriter who shares the same name. And then story number three was Leeds centre-back Liam Cooper confirmed he once had to be rescued by firefighters because he got his arm stuck in a vending machine. Which one was the true story? Have you got it by now? It was Arsenal's Kai Havertz is obsessed with donkeys. Now, you're not going to believe me, so I have got the receipts. Here is a video of Kai Havertz explaining his passion for donkeys.
I always had the love with donkeys. When I was 17, my parents, they got me a present and it was like a partnership with a donkey. So I paid monthly rates and it was my donkey and I could visit him whenever I wanted to. Then we got to know a guy who rescues donkeys in Germany. We worked with him together and the family grew. So now we have a couple of donkeys in Germany. This is, to be honest, even the most important thing. I mean, I love the sport. I love to play football and play it since I'm 3 years old, but I always have my animals around me and it's just fun and nice to spend time with them because I feel like we as humans maybe need to protect them a bit more and spend time with them as much as possible.
That was the video. I'm doing no cuts, so it's going to be in there, and that's the only cut I'm going to do for the whole episode, I promise. Guys, I said I'm going to do a fan-captured goal of the week, and I have done. This one this week is courtesy of Joe. He's an Aston Villa fan, and this isn't a great goal, but just take in the scenery, the celebrations, the team, the British weather. It's Leon Bailey's goal against Bournemouth at the weekend. Enjoy.
Go on, go on, go on. Yeah.
There is another cut there, I know, but I had to put the clip in. But I know it was a terrible goal and it was just a little tap-in finish. But look at the sunshine. The British people getting together to go to the football and enjoy it on the very rare occasion it's sunny in this horrible, horrible country. I just absolutely loved it. And you look at this, thousands and thousands of fans. It's just a lovely, I just absolutely loved that. And I just love seeing the goals from the stands. I think it's just so much better than seeing it from TV. But yeah, absolutely loved that. And I'll be bringing another one back next week as well. So make sure you stay tuned. Guys, thank you for joining me this week. I have really appreciated it once again. Hopefully you enjoyed Michael Chopra last week. Like I said, we have got a few footballers coming up as well. So yeah, some exciting people. And obviously when one comes on, then it builds and then they get in touch with someone else. And Michael Chopra's obviously helping us out in the background, trying to get us some guests on. So yeah, we absolutely love that. Big shout out to Kilimanjaro. It's his birthday today as of recording. That is our one of our favourite guests we've had, Kilimanjaro. Plenty of you listened to it. Not many of you went across and watched it. But if you haven't, go and do it. He's a lovely guy, Scottish geezer, DJ, headlined, all over the world. And also was the backup to Swedish House Mafia, Fatboy Slim, just some crazy artists. Fred again in the Boiler Room. Yeah, absolutely massive football fan. And he was the face of Man United's kit launch as well. So yeah, if you haven't already seen that, go ahead and see that. It's a couple of episodes ago. You'll see it, Kilimanjaro. But guys, again, I'll ask you, if you can subscribe, hit that subscribe button. If you can like the episode, we appreciate it. We are back next week, next Wednesday, and every Wednesday until the end of the season. There it is. I did it. No slip-ups, no cock-ups. One whole episode, no edits. Thank you so much, guys. Have a great week.
When they were playing in the yellow and white stripes.
It was a gauntlet. It was-